Now it is time to cross the Atlantic to Canada. John Rafferty is the Chief Executive of the CNIB in Toronto. And time for our monthly catch-up, John, because we've got lots to talk about today.
Indeed.
We have spoken in the past, John, about strategy updates and so on, because it is a huge part of large charities like yourself, you know, looking ahead to the years to come. You have a bit more to tell us on that?
Yes, I do. We're midway through our current strategic plan, and we had a couple of overarching goals, and one of which is something that Canada maybe has been a bit behind other countries around the world in getting success on, and that's the integration of the vital rehabilitation services that we provide into the continuum of care. Throughout our history, which is almost 100 years now, we've really provided all of this on the backbone of charitable fundraising. And so the current strategy was to make a very strong and concerted effort to engage with our provincial health partners and talk about the need to integrate the vital work that we do into a continuum of care and into a funding model that that makes sure that someone's ability to receive the O&M lesson or the independent living skills, low vision assessment work that they need isn't dependent upon how many people show up to a gala or attend a fundraising walk.
Is this then related to the cost for CNIB? If you're having to, say, take up this training and this support, whereas it should be done by sort of local or provincial governments?
Yeah, it partly the cost. I think we actually began with the outreach to our client base across the country, and this is really more about where the fulfillment of someone's rights belong and who's responsible for it. And it's really about the responsibility of society to be able to accommodate the needs for someone when they lose their sight, to have the training necessary to be able to be safe in traveling in their community and safe living in their home. So, you know, there's definitely a financial dimension to it. We've had success now in many of the provinces across the country, in Newfoundland, in Nova Scotia. We're most of the way there in New Brunswick. We just received a strong commitment in Ontario to fully integrate, which is huge, as well as in the province of Saskatchewan. So this is really shifting where the type of work that we do in rehabilitation fits within the mindset of the medical community. And it also is about whether someone should have to go to, in air quotes, a charity to receive vital care versus having it as part of the continuum of the healthcare itself.
Would that include then sort of best practice, like a model that could be used in the different provinces?
Absolutely. That's been a big part of what we've been working on. Last year was successful in getting a Canadian patient charter for vision care and bringing all of the parties together as to what the roles and responsibilities of all the players are in that continuum of care. It's about getting our frontline service staff all having the appropriate certification, the organization on the rehab side being accredited as a rehab organization. It's about standards of care. So it is all linked around best practice, quality of care, and having something that's very patient-centric or client-centric in that process. And having something that takes away the stigmas of someone having to be referred to and go to a charity in order to receive the types of fundamental service that are part of their rights as an individual for safety at home and in the community.
Have you found that people who perhaps are beginning to lose their sight are reluctant to look to a charity because purely it is a charity and not something which they should expect in the local area?
Absolutely. And it's even before that, the doctors are reluctant to refer. They're having a difficult conversation with someone at that stage in the journey because of the person's injury that they've just had or the eye disease that the doctor is talking to them about. And to suggest that they need to go to an Institute for the Blind, which is very well known as a charity, is just wrong. They should be being referred to the new brand that we will be launching this fall for rehabilitation care. That is something that isn't going to add stress to an already stressful situation.
Okay, so some great steps forward there, and no doubt we'll hear more on that as we head towards the autumn as well, John. Staying on the medical side, though, on eye conditions, Charles Bonnet syndrome, not something which many people have heard about.
No, and you've got a large listener base, and one in five people listening right now have Charles-Bonnet syndrome, and most of them don't know about it. We're not going to cover everything about it today. Hopefully, if nothing else, we'll prompt some people to do some searches and maybe ask some questions. But Charles-Bonnet syndrome, a syndrome that presents itself for people with vision loss as hallucinations, and some of them can be quite small and simple, and some of them can be really quite disturbing to full-blown hallucinations. It's a syndrome that people who have lost sight, their brain is using residual vision in their brain, and I'm not the medical person, so I apologize to the scientists that may be listening, that present themselves in the form of hallucinations. It is quite common. It can be as simple as someone reaching for a refrigerator door who has no sight and can see their arm opening the door while they're doing it, which is fairly innocuous and isn't going to disturb someone. But it can be full-blown hallucinations of people in a room that are being pulled from, as I say, the person's visual cortex.
Is that something which you've heard from service users of CNIB?
We came across instances of individuals that we started speaking to. Our head of research, Keith Gordon, did a very large study here and is taking it over to other countries, has been doing it in New Zealand as well, and to look at both the prevalence and the degree to which people are being misdiagnosed with issues that are being presented as mental health issues that are really actually related to a syndrome that is to do with the person's vision loss. And it changes the perspective of the individual. And as I say, I would expect one in five of the people listening today to the show will experience some form of hallucination. That's what the research shows. And if misdiagnosed and if their medical professional is looking at this through the wrong lens, it can lead to some downstream problems.
Indeed, if mistaken, as you say, for a mental health condition when it's actually related to sight loss itself.
Yeah.
We've got time for one more topic, John. We're going to talk about technology this time.
The Orbit Braille Reader, hopefully your listeners know quite a bit about it, came from the RNIB chair taking a very strong position on wanting to forever change the price of refreshable Braille readers. And we were really pleased to be a part of the consortium of organizations around the world that provided funding into this vision that Kevin Carey had. And we're thrilled to be a part of the celebrations at CSUN in California at the Technology Center when the Orbit Braille Reader was launched. And as part of the RNIB organization yourself, you have a self-interest in it, I know, but I just wanted to express our gratitude to the folks at RNIB and to the leadership that came out of that. We are thrilled in Canada to have been a part of it, and we're looking to now get this great new refreshable Braille device in the hands of school kids across the country who otherwise wouldn't have been able to afford access to such an important learning device.
It is a fantastic piece of technology, and when we spoke with Kevin some time ago about this when he was at the early stages, because a couple of things that I spoke to him about, John, was the fact that, you know, we're in the 21st century, that does Braille still have such an important place that we still need to look at new technology for it? And also the cost, because Braille displays historically have been incredibly expensive.
Exactly. And what's interesting at CSUN, and I made a comment, I happened to be having a town hall meeting with all of our staff from coast to coast yesterday, and there were a large number of new and updated Braille devices at the CSUN Technology Conference a couple of weeks ago. And some of these things haven't been updated or refreshed in years. And you know, it's no coincidence, I believe, that in the year that we're launching something that's quite revolutionary in the area of Braille and technology, that everyone else who's involved in that area is also updating and refreshing what they're doing in that area. And I think that it's a resurgence and a rebirth of how technology actually enables Braille, as opposed to what people falsely perceive, which is that technology is a replacement for Braille, particularly within, you know, developing countries, and particularly in the Western world, within the school systems. We need to make Braille more available more interesting, more present in the classroom itself through devices like this.
John, out of time once again. If people would like to find out any information about what we've been talking about or more on CNIB, where can they go for those details?
Always can go to cnib.ca. We suggest that they can also follow us on Twitter or friend us and be a part of our family on Facebook. And for those that want more information, I do encourage people to ask questions and do some searching about Charles Bonnet. There's some interesting facts that that maybe your listeners might find very useful.
John, pleasure speaking with you as always. We'll catch up again next month. But for the moment, thank you for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you, Alan.